decision boundary of the Gaussian LTA. As you can see here, in the number 20 set on the test set, it's a straight line. So why is a straight line? You may have this high level intuition because they share the covariance metrics, right? The covariance terms come from this covariance terms. And since they are shared, so we can cancel a lot of reference, which makes it linear. And let's do this. So the decision boundary consists of a set of points where the node magnitude for the class 1 is equal to the node magnitude for the class 2, and we move to the left hand side. And we are cancel the large number of terms equal because of this common covariance matrix and obtain the following results. And here, let's work out this dimension. This is 1 by n, this is n by n, this is n by 1. So this will give you a 1 by n vector. So 1 by n times n by 1 is just inner product, right? It's just a weighted summation of the feature values, not make it mean. And those are all constant terms that are irrelevant to the feature vector x. So this shows that the decision boundary is actually linear in x. So now let's compare MD with LTA. Storage MD requires some order of n. We have already write the exact numbers for the parameters 1D, and LK requires a model of n squared. So the quadratic dependence on n makes LK slower than NB during training classification. And both models has good interpretability since the parameters correspond to the class condition averages. And LK will generate more data than NB to estimate a model of n parameters to ensure parameters. And MD will give you a quadratic decision boundary, and LD will give you a linear decision boundary. So generally classify a model a estimate of the distribution features for each from each class, given a feature with class with a large for several weeks. And works with small amount of data in course it assumes. Makes strong assumptions on the data generation process, that is class conditions, and work with multiple paths. And disadvantages, accuracy depends on the selection of proper probability distribution. So if it is real valued, so is it a Gaussian distribution reasonable to the model? So if not, so we may try some other continuous probability distribution. Right. So if the probability distribution does not take the material equation well, then the accuracy may be bad. Alright. Now let's jump to logistic regression. I believe most of you have learn or play with the logistic regression, right? So hopefully in today's lecture we are going to add some new insights into logistic regression. So if you review, so classification with generic models, the first step is to build the training data, the feature x and corresponding class label y. And in many applications, the collection of class label y may be very tedious, time-consuming, and expensive. And we learn class conditional distribution Q of x given y. And we use this work to actually have probability equivalence or posterior probability. And the training data is used to learn the class conditional. And the classifier is secondary. and density estimation is a yield cost problem. So which density to use and how much digit we need to estimate accurately. And here's advanced one gene, which is the inventor of SVM. SVM is short for photograph machines, and we'll spend a week and a half to introduce SVM and put it into a broader context of convex optimization. And the binary neural network is a giant in the field of machine learning, and they suggest that when solving a problem, try to avoid solving a marginal problem as an intermediate step. So I partially agree with his common claim, because I think it is application dependent. So I work with vision problems for human vision or computer vision or machine vision. And in vision problems, so we have a philosophy that so if you cannot solve a simple problem, you may have to solve a complex one. That absorbs your simple problem as a subtask. So when you solve a more complex one, the simpler one may be solved to some reasonable accuracy, for example. And when we solve this complex task, we may have an extra information that may aid the problem solving process of this simple problem. And moreover, so if we put the simple problem into a broader context, it may become well formulated, and we may really have the opportunity to find some feasible and better solutions. That's the other way around, according to this case. So therefore, in this context, the more general problem is to learn a generalist classifier. And the simpler problem is to directly learn a discriminant classifier. That is, we solve for the POY game X directly. Just a question. So about a little terminology, discriminative means learn to directly discriminate the classes apart using the features, not P of Y game X. So P of Y game X is a one-dimensional probability distribution, right? Because Y is just some class label. So that's much easier to estimate. And then generative, there are models of how we generate from different classes, such as x given y. X is a high dimensional distribution. And linear classifier setup. So we have feature vector again, interval x, n dimensional feature vector. And we have classes, positive one or positive classes, negative one for negative class. And you may see from some other textbooks that they may use 0, 1 notation, 1 for positive class, 0 for negative class, right? But they are essentially the same. So the derivations of different algorithms may be slightly different, but they will arrive at the equivalent solutions. And in our course, we are going to use negative 1 notation, because it will make the comparison of the most functions that are above by different machine learning algorithms easier. And the goal is to calculate the linear function of the feature vector, so x is equal to w transpose x plus b. That's our decision function. And this is a linear product, right? The definition of linear product, let's say. The sum of j is b is equal to 1 of n, wj j plus b. So w is the weight vector of the linear function. It multiplies each feature value with a weight. And then add them together and pass this b as a bias term. And the prediction rule is very simple. If fx is greater than 0, that's positive. Negative, that's we can write them compactly as a sine function, right? Sine function. So sine of a is equal to 1, where a is greater than 0, negative 1, a is less than 0. And when a is exact 0, we may put the equal here, or we may put the equal here. We may even have a safe third condition, but last but not least, the only concern is three equal than that, three related. And the linear classifier separates the feature space into two half space. So each corresponds to the feature value belongs to the first class and the second class. So the class boundary is normal or orthogonal or perpendicular to the vector. And the class boundary is also called separating hyperbola. And here is one example where alpha is a 2-1 vector. Here we have that. So that's 2. This is 1. And we start to form out this direction. And the bias term is 0. So my question is, so can you prove the separating hyperplane is also called with alpha? Why it has a 90 degree. Yeah. And the proof is going to be very, very simple. So we random draw two points on the descent boundary. Let's see, this is x1, this is x2. And since they are on the descent boundary, right, you must satisfy x1 plus b is equal to 0, x2 plus b is equal to 0. Subtract 1 from 2, we have w transpose x1 minus x2 is equal to 0. So what is x1 minus x2? So it's a vector from x2 point to x1. So those vectors has the same direction and the same boundary. Right? So the inner product between width vector and this direction vector is 0, which means that it has 90 degrees, which means that the width vector is also the same boundary, and we are done. Right, is it clear? So to prove they also right, the descent boundary and the width vector. Alright. So in an n-dimensional feature space, the parameters are in n-dimensional. The equation W transpose X plus B defines a n-1 dimensional linear surface. So when n is equal to 2, that's 1D9, which has been shown in the previous slide. When n is equal to 3, W is a 2D plane. In general, we call it a hyperplane. It is a hyperplane. And how to set the classifier parameters? So we, in machine learning, we learn them from training data. So classifiers differ in the objective used to learn the parameters W. So we will look at two examples. One is just regression will be covered in this lecture, and the other is the supported dimension of S for short, which we will cover in later lectures. And the just regression is a probabilistic approach, and the SVM is a geometric approach. So the just regression takes a probabilistic approach. In probabilistic, we need to map those decision value or function value to a probability value between 0 and 1. And we use the sigma function to do so. So here sigma z is equal to 1 over 1 plus equal to the power of negative z, where z is a real function. And this is the shape So what does this ship remind you of? So what does this ship remind you of? Think about it. This means that so this CDF this import function may be the CDF function of some random variable, right? And that variable is called logistic random variable. And the variant of sigmoid function can indeed be interpreted as the CDF of a logistic runner, and I also have a detailed comment on this in our lecture. Right. So given a vector vector, the probability of a class is for qualitative is sigmoid of this function value, and for left class is 1 minus sigmoid of this function value. Since they should sum up 1, right? That's why it's 1 minus sigmoid of f x. And 1 minus sigmoid of f x is equal to sigmoid negative of f x. So now let's prove it. So 1 minus sigmoid of fx is equal to 1 minus, let's write down the explicit formula, 1 plus e to the f to fx. And this is equal to 1 plus e to the f to fx, and e to the f to fx. And we multiply both denominator by e of fx. That is 1. That is 1 plus e to the fx. Right? And this is equal to 1 plus 1 over 1 plus e to the negative f of x. And this is sigmoid negative f of x. And we are up. And therefore, we can write those two equations compactly as P of y given x is equal to sigmoid of y times fx. When y is positive 1, that's this formula y. When y is negative 1, that's this formula. So any question on this? Right. So here, we directly model the class posteriori of the inorder class conditions. And this is the visualization of one particular class condition, right? This is the descendant boundary for features less than 2, we predict as negative, for features greater than 2, we predict as positive. So given the data set D, we learn function parameters using MLE. So we maximize the conditional, the sum of the conditional non important and behind the conditional bar. Meaning that we treat this weight vector as a run as a random variable instead of just some kind of vector. So as a random variable, we may apply some prior probabilities to incorporate our prior logic. Right? And B, since it's behind the semicolon, that's just some kind of deterministic unknown parameter to be estimated. So any question of this location? So notation is behind the semicolon are parameters. Notation behind the conditional bar are random variables. And here we know the formula for this, right? It's this formula. It's this formula. Right. It's this formula. So here we essentially have this is 1 over 1 plus x function yi and fxi. Fxi is a linear function, right? A double transpose xi plus b. And we take the log of it. Since it's 1 over, that's negative in front. Negative log. 1 plus x function yi plus w plus cos xi plus b. That's this formula here. This is negative. This is average over 425 cos 27. So, is this formula clear? Alright. So, to prevent overfitting, we can add a prior distribution of W and we assume a Gaussian distribution P of W with variance C over 2. And which means that P of W is proportional to this formula. And we can write exactly what distribution does W follow. Alright. Here we have T of W in general follow a multivariate Gaussian distribution with mean vector mu and covariance matrix sigma. And we know the general formula for this multivariate distribution, right? 1 over square root 2 pi to the power of n and matrix determinant of sigma and we have x function negative 1 over 2 w minus mu vector transpose of sigma inverse of w minus mu. So those are the general expressions. Here, we don't expect mu, right? We don't have mu appear here. That is, mu here, mu is equal to zero. We assume W has zero mean. This Gaussian distribution has zero mean, which means that this is 1 over square root of 2 pi to the power of n, and the matrix determinant of the sigma. Here we have x function, negative 1 over 2, u is 0, w transpose sigma inverse. And again, right, so those w has variance c over 2. And we don't model, we assume they are independent, each weight vector are independent, which makes this sigma the diagonal matrix with variance on the diagonals, c over 2, the both diagonals are all 0. Right? And this, if sigma exists, What's sigma inverse? What's the inverse of a diagonal matrix? We just invert each element on the diagonals, right? So the sigma inverse is simply 2 over C. 2 over C, zeros on the diagonals. And if we plug this sigma into this formula, we have 1 over 2 square root 2 pi to the power of n. The matrix determinant of a diagonal matrix is simply the product of elements on the diagonals. That's c over 2 to the power of n. And we have x function 1 over 2. And since those are diagonals, right, with the same entry, it's just the. So you can write explicit. Work out this matrix multiplication, which is equal to root over C. We'll transpose that. And these two, this cancels. And we have negative 1 over C, which is here. And this has a constant. We get rid of this constant, makes this equation proportion to x, like 1 over C. So with the smaller W vector, the probability will be higher, right? So those probably encourage W vector to be as small as possible. So that's our priority. We don't want to the S and the W vector to be large. We want it to be small. That's why we have this prior into our estimation problem. Now we maximize the posterior probability of this weight vector condition on yi xi parameter by d. And according to the chain rule of probability, according to the base rule, from this step to this step, you can write it as p of the joint probability P of the joint probability W Y I given X I parameterized by P divided by P of Y I given X I parameterized by P. Right? And since the D is just a bias vector, it may affect the location of the distribution, but it will not affect the probability density value. That's why here we drop this D in this denominator. And so the numerator are the same. And in the numerator, we further adopt the chain rule of V. This is equal to C of W given XI parameter by D times C of YI given XI comma W parameter by D. Since this vector is independent of XI and does not parameterize by D, we get rid of these two terms to make it this Q W, and here these terms are the same. And so from this to this, the denominator does not depend on all parameters. So we can get rid of the denominator. And the product, log of product is sum of logs. That's R max Q W 1 over 2, the average. Across all examples. Those are the log magnitudes. Those are prior, those are the log magnitudes. And now we know that this follows So P, we looked up P of W follows X function of length 1 over C W transpose W, right? The log of it is simply 1 over C W transpose W. And this is negative 1 over N, the sum X from 1 over N, more 1 plus X function. Right, and make one I W transpose X I plus B. And since we have both negative sign in front, we can get rid of this negative sign, make it plus, and turn argmax into a argmin problem. Then we arrive at this formula. We get over this negative sign, we make argmax to argmin. And the first term is a regularization term, where we penalize entries in W from getting too large. And C is a regularization hyperparameter. Larger C allows larger values, and smaller C discourages larger values. And the second term is a data fit term. We want to make the parameters WB to well fit the data. And we can define. So here, this is F of Xi. So we define Zi as a product of Yi and Fxi. We have the following equation. If Zi is positive, which means that they should be both be positive or both be negative. And for positive Fx, the prediction is again positive. And for negative Fx, the prediction is again negative, which for now is ground truth statement. And then it means that the sample Xi is classed correctly. And if Zi is negative, which means that this and this has opposite sign, it means that sample Xi is classed incorrectly. And if Zi is 0, the sample is classified boundaries. And then we can write this as log 1 plus x function negative Zi, right? This is known as log 1 plus x function negative Zi. Is known as a Nogest loss function. And this is the shape of the Nogest function. For Zi is negative, it's incorrectly classified. For Zi is positive, it's correctly classified. When Ai is smaller and smaller, we have larger loss for badly misclassified samples. And for AI is positive but small, we have non-zero losses. It's not equal to zero. We have non-zero for correctly classified samples that are near boundary. And it's clear from this formula. This should always be greater than zero. Right? If we have a log two, should be always greater than zero, which means that we always can apply the loss to all examples, non-zero loss. But with Z is larger, the loss should be approaching zero. So that's why we have this curve like this. So if we define the whole term as a loss function L with respect to W and B, and there is no closed form solution for this loss function. No closed form solution means no simple one-line equations to solve for W and B. And we may have to use a iterative optimization problem to find the optimal solution. And for example, we use gradient descent to step down hill in each direction. And where L is an objective function, W is a weight vector, and D has a learning rate, how far to step in each direction. And if we have already learned those logistic regression function on Alice data with this weight values and this bias term, so how to interpret it? So we have natural prevalence to make fx positive. So natural prevalence is associated with the positive class. And on selecting the regularization, I have a parameter. This C has a big effect on the decision boundary and the accuracy. So how to estimate how to select the value of C. So when C is 10,000 accuracy, 0.92, 100, 0.92, 10, 0.96, 1, 0.86, and so on. And here we may select C is equal to C because it has the highest accuracy. So how to select the C? So one typical approach to select hyperparameters on small scale training set is to use cross-validation. So we run many experiments on the training set to see which parameters work on different versions of data, different versions of the training data. So we first partition the data into fields of training and validation, and we try a range of C values on each field as validation and pick the value that works best for all loads. And here, let's say we have already set this C to 100. And we split the training set into 10 folds. On the first round, we use the first fold as validation, the remaining 9 as training. We train the model to get its accuracy on this first fold, that is 93%. And on the second round, we use the second fold as a validation set, the remaining 9 as a training set. We retrain the model to get the accuracy on the second fold as 90%, and so on. We repeat the process 10 times, using each fold as a validation and remaining as a training. And we average those 10 validation accuracy as a performance indicator this particular C, and we can try a different range of C to compare this average accuracy, average validation accuracy, to select the best C. Now let's summarize this cross-validation procedure into this argument. We first select a range of C values. Suppose we can select a range of H C values, right? And we repeat key rounds. So split the training data into training and validation. We learn a classifier for each value of C, and we record the accuracy of the validation for each C, and we select the value that has the highest average accuracy over K rounds, and we retrain the classifier using all the data and the select C. So that's the whole procedure. So my question is that, so here is the whole procedure. How many classifiers have been trained? How many number of classifiers have been trained during the whole procedure? Think about it. So for each of the key rounds, we need to try each different C values, and we can the whole model, right? And after that, we can identify the best C. And number of possible state that you can apply. Right? But when we deal with the large school data set, we don't have those computational resources. We may need to fix dating of the training, validation, and testing, and set hyperparameter on the fixed validation set, and maybe retrain the model two or three times, or two or three times, instead of P times C plus one. And here shows this example. When we have obtained average state accuracy for a range of state values, we simply pick the last, the highest one as the best state. And so far we have learned only a classifier for two classes. This is known as the feather classifier or the collective. And for more than two classes, we can split the problem into several feather classifiers. And the typical way of doing so is one versus the rest. So for each class, we train a classifier for that class versus the other classes. If we have three, we train three value classifiers, one versus two, three, two versus one, three, two versus one, two. And prediction, we calculate the probability for each binary classifier and select the class with the highest probability. And in the case of the three, for the first classifier, we have this probability, right? Y I is equal to 1 given this. And for the second binary classifier, we have this first probability, Y I is equal to 2 given C. And for the third one, we have here Y I is equal to 3 given C. To repeat, the one with the largest possible probability and output the corresponding class data. That's it. So that's the prediction rule. An example on three class error category, we have added an expert errors classes. And these are the individual versus binary classifier. Here we have the first class as a positive, the remaining as a negative. The second class as a positive, the remaining as a negative. The third as a positive and the remaining as a negative classes. And those are different boundaries. And based on the prediction rule, we can combine those three. You see them in books. The three decent boundaries into piecewise linear decent boundaries. Right. And another way of getting a multi-class classifier is to, in terms of logistic regression, is to define a multi-class objective. So we have one weight vector for each class C. Here we form it a various term for each class for the instance. And you can absorb the best term into the vector as well and add an extra feature dimension which can only take down value of 1. And we define probabilities with the so-called soft max function. It's analogous to sigmoid function for binary logistic regression. And the sigmoid function, the softmax function is defined as follows. P of y is equal to c given x is equal to x function w subscript c transpose x divided by over those exponent values. And the class with a larger response of wc transpose x will have the highest probability and will be the predicted class. And here is a binary classifier based on the individual weight vector. And the first as a positive, the remaining as a negative, and so on. And the individual weight vector work together to partition the space. And you see from those boundary are pretty similar as we see before using one versus the rest classifier. So regarding geometry, Node.js regression is explicitly designed to have a linear decision boundary in the library case, because we rely on the linear decision function. And in the multi-class case, the decision boundary is simply piece per single. Because it is the, you can consider it as the arc marks of the set, arc marks of the set of many linear functions, which will give you a piece by single. So regarding speed, so learning Node.js regression requires interpreting numeric information, right? And the very basic one is gradient descent. And in the next lecture, or maybe in week 4, we are going to dive deep into gradient descent. We are going to prove mathematically why gradient descent will lower the functions provided that. If you learn it with very small, it guarantee to lower your loss function with gradient descent. And regarding storage, the model requires on the order of n parameters, the same order on n, but much less number is O n squares. Right? Remember, in LDA we need to estimate the full share for various metrics, which consists of n times n plus 1 divided by 2 factors, that is on order of n squared. And interoperability, the importance of feature SJ can be understood in terms of corresponding learned weight. So let's do a more just regression summary. So classifier, so we define a linear function as our linear decision function, that we transfer as the speed. And so, do you guys know how to absorb this speed into this rate vector? Right here, our W is W1, W2, Wn, right? So we can augment it into an n plus 1 dimension vector. W0, Wn, W1, where W0 is equal to B. Those are the bias term. And for the x, originally is x1 up to xn. Right? We can similarly augment it as x0 up to xn, where x0 is equal to 1, constantly equal to 1. 1, here the product between x0 and w0 will give you the bias term b. That's how you absorb the bias term in your vector by adding this. So now feature value x not is equal to 1. So given a feature vector, the probability of a class is sigmoid of fx. Vector is 1 minus sigmoid of fx. This is also equal to sigmoid of f. Vector fx. And this is the formula of the sigmoid function. And it can be interpreted as the CDF, human distribution function of a logistic library. And we, during our derivation, we have come up with, we have identified since we're working with small scale data, we use cross validation pick the utilization parameter. And when the data set is large, we may use a fixed spacing of 20 of training validation and testing. And the typical ratio can be 6-2-2 or 7-1-2 or 8-1-1. And if the data set is not enough, we may have 9, 0.5, 0.5, because we want to train on as many examples as possible. So those are typical ratios to speak a bit. Regarding classification, given a new sample, XR will pick the class with the highest possible probability. And if it's binary, if the ratio is greater than 1, positive, negative, otherwise. And we can directly use this linear descent function if it's positive for the class, make the left class, but it was assigned to this function. Alright, and as the same as the week one, we have a lecture 2.3, which is the opinion of IPython notebook, a self-contained IPython notebook to introduce you with machine learning in Python. So we have introduced or the new with you guys a little bit some Python packages that are relevant to our course. And a error data set in examples so that you can reproduce some of the papers in the test, right? So if you are not familiar with Python, I highly encourage you guys to work through it. Take some time to work through it, right? So that's all.